of us get hung up on a title, on something that's on our business card, because it's a social validation of success. And today we're going to talk about the concept of, it's not about who, it's about who you are. It's not about what you do, right? It's not about a title. And I think sometimes for some of us, it takes later in our careers before we have the aha moment that it really isn't about the title. But I just want to peel that apart for people today and really talk about how you can shift your perspective a little bit and what you focus on to achieve, to me, a more fulfilling level of success that's not based on status or rank or title. And so I have Michael Kithcart here with me, and she is the CEO and founder of MWK Coaching. She works with tons of leaders across a variety of executive all the way to I'm in career transition, right? And I want to do something more fulfilling. I want to do something different. So she sees this, right? Live out all day to day. And so that's really why I wanted to have this conversation with you, because I think it's something none of us can avoid, right? We have this throughout our careers. It's not that something's wrong when we feel like our validation is in a title, but it's how do you look at it differently? And that's really our goal today, is to talk about and kind of shift your perspective. So I would love with you to just start with your journey, because it's really important to our listeners to know that none of us have this perfect journey that's all planned out.
Oh my goodness. No.
So I'm always excited to hear someone's journey, because I always learn something new. So if you'd start there and welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jamie. I'm excited to talk with you. So yes, no, my journey is very zigzaggy. and I think that's familiar to a lot of people. I think the themes that come out in my journey are really around stories, helping people, and continuous improvement. That's what I've discovered thus far in that. And then in between, it's taken lots of turns. I started out in college thinking I was going to be a sports broadcaster. I was going to be the first woman play-by-play for the NFL. And then Gail Sarans did it while I was still in college. And so that wasn't exactly my path, but I did spend lots of years in media and the radio side, in sales. I moved over from the programming to the sales side, partly due to a mishap on the air. And so I really felt like when I got into that sales side of advertising that I was helping people. You know, I was helping them recruit for new people. I was helping them grow their business. I was helping them launch a business or a product. And I really felt that that was satisfying. And just where I loved sports and I loved the stories of the underdog and winning, that's business owners. Totally business owners. So I felt like there was this kind of this smooth transition, and I really loved what I was doing, and I had some great coaches and mentors along the way. And then I hit like 28, 29, and I was like, what am I going to do with my life? Like, I'm doing this. It's great.
You had your midlife career crisis early.
Yes, I did. And I think I've had a couple.
They actually say now they're seeing people are hitting 3 or 4.
Yes.
Right? Not just one midlife. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. So maybe we'll come up with a clever name for that and we'll market it. And there we go. So I had never been out of the country. I went to Paris on a trip, and people said, you need to stay for 2 weeks. And I did. And I fell in love with it. And I said, I need to live here. I need to live here. I need to speak French. And so I came back and I made a plan. And I made a 1-year plan, and I gave it to my boss, and I said, in 1 year, I'm quitting my job, and I'm moving. And here are the things that I want to accomplish, by then. So I did, and I did it, and I sold my house, and I sold my car, and I sold basically everything I owned, and I moved to Paris at 30 because I thought, I need to learn about the world. So there's the continuous improvement, right? Like, it's like, okay, I kind of got good at this. Now I'm going to go try and get good at something else, which included French and getting my master's in international relations and diplomacy. So
wow.
I leapt into that, and so I have very personal accounts of you are not what you do. It's about who you are. Because I went to Paris and had a major, major identity crisis. And, we can talk about that later. But it was just like I went to France and nobody cared about my job title. They just wanted to know who I was. And I had spent the last decade just working and I had no idea who I was.
It's
So wow. That was an interesting journey. That was some continuous improvement that I hadn't planned on. And and really, really shaped, you know, who I am and how I lead and how I coach others.
Yeah.
Today. So I really feel like that experience was kind of that foundation of I need to coach, because the people that I met, and you know, I was problem solving with them, and a lot of them ended up being more personal, you know, existential kind of problems that we were working on. But people kept coming to me, and I was like, okay, well, I like this. I like helping people, and this is kind of feels like in a different way. So when I came back to the States about almost 3 years later, what did I do? So here's for the people that say I'm not doing anything with my degree. Don't worry about it. I didn't either. International relations and diplomacy. I went into sales management. So, you know, it didn't follow, but you know, I felt like I had some connections there. And what happened, I got into that sales leadership role, and we were a company that that used Gallup. So we used Gallup for different hiring assessments, and then we used StrengthsFinder. And so I got coached and certified and everything in StrengthsFinder, and I got a coach. And I loved that experience so much, and I was like, I want to be you. That's what I want to be. I want to be a coach, because what I cared about was building teams and the people and assembling the right people together. And so I have, just like in that culmination, would say in the last 14 years, I've been a coach. I went and became a coach inside the corporation that I was a sales leader in. And I've been a coach inside a leadership development firm, like CEO advising. I've had my own coaching firm. And then what happens is I kept dabbling in and out. Maybe these are the other, like, you know, career crises. And so I've gone back and I've dabbled into leadership roles in corporations and entrepreneurial startups and stuff. But what it always comes back to, it's about the people. And I really feel like I'm here because I help bring out the best in people to help them get where they want to go. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can be a business owner. Yeah. You can be a leader.
Correct. And so, yes, so I'm ready to dive in. But first, before we dive in, I want to know what your superpower, what superpower do you think has kind of helped you get to this point?
I really think it's connector. I am a connector, and it's not just it's certainly of people. I love, like, oh, you need to know so-and-so. And I think a lot of people are really good at that. So, but I also feel like one of my coaching superpowers in connecting is information and ideas. So I'll brainstorm with clients. I will provide resources that are really specific to the situation that they're going through. So it's not just like, oh, now you get this piece of information. You know, I really feel like I'm always thinking about, even when I'm not in sessions with them, what they might need, and then provide it.
I've never thought about that as a superpower on the connector of people, yes, but I have a bit of that too. And that's really interesting that you say that, because it's more like connecting the dots. Like, I'm hearing different things when they're saying something, and it's like, oh, okay, I'm connecting it to these other things. Have you thought about this? Right? It's that. So that's fascinating. Yeah. I love that. I love that strength. So I want to dive into this topic about, you know, and it's not about who you are. It's about who you are. It's not about what you do. And you've given some examples already. And as you were talking, I was thinking about, like, your titles and your degrees don't tell your story.
Not even
they
remotely.
Don't really tell your story. So you talked a little bit about how you've had these certain points in your life about, okay, that was that moment where I realized it was more about who I was.
Yeah.
Either yourself, or what do you see in your clients, and how do you see it impact their growth and success, or hold them back sometimes? Like, what do you see in clients where titles and degrees and those types of things hold them back from making a change?
Okay. I think first and foremost, what happens is they wonder, you know, like, nobody's going to know who I am.
Because the identity is in that.
In the title. Yeah. I see this in people who have grown businesses, and then they sell the business. And now they're not the business owner anymore. I'm sure you've seen this
too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's like, well, now who am I? And it's like, oh my goodness, you are this fabulously successful business owner that is, you know, gets to do whatever it is that they want. Sometimes it has been, people have been with one company for a long time, which we're starting to see that less and less, but still, somebody that has a 10, 15 year run at a company, they're known within that environment. And then either they wake up and realize this is not the role for me anymore, or the company doesn't match my values, or the company decides they're not the right person anymore. And then they don't know themselves beyond that company, you know,
that's their identity.
That is. And so, and then people that are in career transition, either because it was forced upon them or because they've chosen, it's like, now how do I tell my story? So in all of the cases, the consistent theme there is we look and at how, what they're thinking about, how are they thinking of themselves, where are they getting evidence of that, what are some of the themes that they hear people describe them, because people never describe you as like, you are the VP of business development. Like, you need to know this
your
person.
Your relationship. Like, yeah. They describe you with different words.
Yes. So if you can't find them yourselves, we go out and we seek that, because people need to start getting that sense of descriptors of themselves that aren't about anything with a title attached to it.
And it's interesting, in our superpower, we have a leadership superpowers training. It's the exact same thing, is that we talk about some basic leadership concepts, right? The guardrails, but within that, it's what are your superpowers? What are your authentic gifts that you bring to leadership? So many people have no idea. Right? And the guidance we give them is ask the people around you, because they see it when you don't, right? They'll put words on it that you would be like, wow, yeah, you're right, but I would never describe it that way. But they can see it oftentimes when you can't. So I think that's a great exercise for people to ask their circle.
Thank you. It really does open some eyes. And it's, I'm a strengths finder coach, and so positive psychology is really, I believe in it wholeheartedly. And oftentimes the strengths that we have, the superpowers, we take them for granted because they come easy, or we're naturally gravitate toward them, right? And so we're not paying attention to them. And that's why it's helpful to have others kind of mirror back to you and recognize that not everybody is able to do that to the degree that you are.
And it seems so logical when you say it, but the first time I took StrengthsFinders, and I've taken it multiple times in my corporate career, I was probably mid-20s, and I had that moment where I was like, well, isn't everybody a maximizer? Isn't everybody? It's a naiveness about who we really are. And no, everyone doesn't have that. But it sounds so logical now. But I think, especially even early on in our careers, it's important to start to dig into some of that stuff, because it starts to guide the direction that you want to go, because you should be doing more and more of that versus less.
You will get exponentially better at the things that you are naturally good at, and you'll get marginally better at the things that you struggle at and keep trying to chip away at.
And you were talking, it really connected a dot for me, in that we do a lot of culture work with organizations, and when you talk about, you know, a lot of people who are staying at companies or who don't know, really know who they are, that's an impact to cultures, because people are staying because of a title and because, well, I couldn't imagine doing something else because then people are going to feel like I took a demotion, or I wasn't good at what I was doing. I'm not a good controller, so I can't imagine going and doing something else. Like, that's what people are going to think if I do something different. So we're essentially creating cultures of people who aren't really happy in their roles, but don't know how to get out and do something different that actually might benefit the company, or might benefit the company if they go somewhere else. And so that was just an aha moment for me, is that's what we're dealing with right now, is so many people that are in that stage of change and don't know how to change. They don't know how to make a change for themselves.
And a key piece of that that you mentioned is, like, they're thinking, oh, if I get demoted, you know, people are going to think that I wasn't good at my job or I wasn't good at something. And that is a storyline. I work with everybody. So going back to the theme, right, like, story is like your brain makes up stuff. If it doesn't have the information, it just plops stuff in. You have a storyline. We all have a storyline going on right now in our heads that is not based in truth. It is not based mm-hmm. off fact. So we start doing the fact finding and those busting out those thoughts that just aren't actually true.
Yeah.
And in corporate environments, I just read a statistic that like up to 70% of people would rather have a better job title than an increase in pay. It is an American sickness.
That's what I was going to ask you. It's a social thing, right? And how, but yet the people that I know that are the happiest are the people that eventually have broken out of that and really don't care about titles, right? And a lot of the work we do with EOS Interaction, which I'm sure you're familiar with, is we kind of don't care about titles. Yes, mm-hmm. I know you need it for your business card, but when we're talking about the business running well and people culture being good and people being happy, it's really like, I don't care about the title of the box. It's what are you doing, right? What's happening in your day to day and what are you accountable for? But it's a really hard thing to break people of.
It is. And we are in a larger culture, an American society culture that really seems to still value and weight titles. Mm-hmm. And so it is a hard cycle to get out of. And the piece that I think we can all just continue to point to is, yes, it's about like, what is it that you do, at, you mm-hmm. know, not the title itself, but more importantly, like, who are you are as a person? How are you showing up? Mm-hmm. How do you want to be? How do you want to treat other people? What's your outlook on life? Because that influences all the work that you do.
Yep.
And so if we can make that shift, mm-hmm. some will find satisfaction in that shift. Others will realize that what they're doing is influencing, that they're not showing up as the type of person that they want to be. So it's time to move on.
Yep.
But we're looking at it from a different angle.
So going back to this idea of the idea of a midlife crisis, right? I really do think there's multiple, and whether it's a crisis or not, mm-hmm. it's just this reevaluation.
Yeah,
right?
Call better it that. Word. I like that.
What do you see in your clients? Are there certain points, and not maybe age is related to it, but just certain points in their growth where they hit it mm-hmm. and you see it consistently, like they're always kind of hitting it at their late 20s, like you did. That mm-hmm. was a little bit of a mid-crisis, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're like, I have to do something completely different. And you took a much bigger risk than most people would take, which is awesome. But do you see certain plateaus like that at certain points?
Yes, and sometimes it's professional pieces that trigger it, and sometimes it's personal.
Yeah.
That is
so there is no set kind of at these ages, because it's more about what's happening in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so big key moments that tend to get people to reevaluate, which is a great word and I would like to borrow mm-hmm. that going yep. forward, are things like a parent dying. Mm-hmm. The life cycle of having children,
yep,
or the children leaving, mm-hmm. right? You know, both of those are big life points. Divorce yep. Is another big thing that I will see happen. And then there are the professional pieces. Like, mm-hmm. I was part of a startup, and then it grew really big, and then we were sold, and now I don't align with the company that acquired us. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big moment. And those are the moments sometimes, actually I would say all of them, like the people underestimate what it is that they're going through.
The personal stuff is easier to put emotion to and to admit the emotion to mm-hmm. it, right? I think I was going to say the exact same thing, that professional is, we kind of go, I'll just suck it up.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we kind of discount it, mm-hmm. that it should be able, that it should have the impact it does on us.
Yes.
And that's where I think people get stuck in these ruts for extended periods of time, which is where you come in, right? And
yes.
when they realize they're in there, because we discount the professional feelings or the professional direction or gut instinct that this isn't as great as it once was.
Right. Yes. And mm-hmm. even underestimate like all of the emotional energy that they've put into the company, their team, their role. I see that a lot, is like there is grief that even when you're excited about what's new, I talk to people about you're going to need some time to deprogram.
Yeah.
Even if it's a
Which we don't usually give ourselves.
No.
Yeah.
Another American trait.
Yeah.
And people underestimate it, like how much time it takes. And some of that depends on how invested you were in the company, how long you were there, that type of thing, or if it was your business, for sure. But it's really important to give yourself space, as you might when you are grieving because of
the
personal
loss.
But you don't do that for your professional life, and it's needed.
So one thing I see, too, with clients and connections of mine and people that I've mentored is we feel bad for wanting something different, right? We get to certain stages in our career, and we've spent the time and, you know, blood, sweat, and tears and our degrees and all of this to get to a point. And we get to that point, we're like, yeah, that's not as great as I thought it was, or I want something different. But we feel guilty for, well, maybe this is just a woman thing. I think there's men that feel this too, is we feel guilty for like, I want something more or I want something different than where I'm at.
Yes. I think there's a couple things that happen on that. Certainly, you know, guilt is one of them. Other times it can be how are people are going to think that I'm just kind of greedy because the life I have is great and now
I
want more.
What do I have to complain about?
Yes. And then sometimes it is people like, why would you take that risk? Like, you know what you've got right now and it's good. Why would you take the leap into the unknown and mess it all up? And sometimes that's like the spouse or the significant other in the household asking that.
Totally.
I've worked with people where it's just like, I'm making my spouse really nervous.
Yeah. Well, and this, we talk about this quite a bit. We have a whole podcast on this from the beginning is evaluating who you're letting in, right? What comments and ideas, you know, everyone can have their perspective, what you're letting in when you're making some of those decisions, which is why I believe coaching is so important, because your mom, your sister, your spouse do not have the same risk profile.
Right.
As someone coming, you know, that's outside and not emotionally invested in it, they want you to be safe. Mm-hmm. They want you to be happy. They don't want you to go through any hardship and pain. Well, that change it creates that, right?
Yes.
Anytime you're going to make a change, whether it's to be an entrepreneur or to change jobs or change companies. And so you've got to make sure that, not that you don't want to listen to them, but the weight of their perspective can't be the most weight.
Right.
You've got to have other perspectives, which is where I think a coach comes in.
Yes.
Is to give you that unbiased, like, what if scenario, so you can balance the decision, right? And what the right risk level is for you.
Yes. Yes. Having an outside perspective that really just has your best interest at heart, who has gone through similar experiences, has worked with people who have gone through similar experiences, that and can provide that safe space where you can just, you can have that filter off.
Yep.
Because now at home, sometimes you got to put that filter on. If
you don't want to scare everybody.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to create fear, right?
Right. Unintended fear, for sure. And so it's an opportunity just to get really real and raw that will help you move forward. And, you know, as you know, too, like business ownership in leadership roles, too, like those are lonely roles. Like you get the higher up you are, the more that you are creating things yourself, the fewer people you have that are going to give you that honest feedback. So.
Absolutely. And again, that this isn't, I'm just thinking as you're talking, this isn't a plug for coaching, right? I mean, we do coaching and
yes.
Michael does coaching, but it's more about, I think people have a misconception about as they hit these plateaus or these kind of reevaluation points that coaching isn't like, I need to hire a coach and have them forever. It's, I need them right now, right? The six
yes.
months or this next year to help me get to the next level, to help me kind of break through
yes.
that plateau that I'm at. And it's not a sign of weakness.
No.
It's bringing somebody else in that's going to shift your paradigm and force you to look at things from a different perspective that you would never do on your own.
Yes. And it does require a level of vulnerability,
yep.
right? You know,
absolutely.
And you have to have that willingness to go into the muck to do it. But yes, I mean, coaching can be very effective in sprints.
Yeah.
So like 3-month sprints, there's something big going on. work through it,
help
move
me
on.
Through it, and then I'll call you the next time I need. It's that kind of approach, and I think some people don't understand, right, that it really, that's how it's meant to be used.
Yes.
Really.
Yep.
Not in I need a coach for the rest of my life kind of thing.
Right.
Right? Because I also believe coaches change as your needs change.
Yes, and you have to find the right fit. The coach that worked for you 3 years ago
probably isn't the same one that's going to help you get to the next level.
Right.
Totally. So likely there are, whether they want to admit it or not, there are people listening that are in this situation in varying degrees, right, of how mm-hmm. severe it is, where they're just like, there's something else, right? There's mm-hmm. something nagging at them in the back of their mind. They're like, I really feel like maybe there's something else for me. Mm-hmm. Where do they start? Outside of hiring a coach, but like, how do they start that mental process? Maybe even to prepare to work with a coach or to prepare to get through this, like live coaching session right now.
Yes.
Like, what would you tell them?
I'd say start writing, journal, write it down, get quiet, just let some things emerge and document it somehow. If you're not a writer, you know, the brain reacts differently if you're writing with a pen versus typing in a computer.
Yeah.
For others, if it's better, just record yourself.
Yeah, I actually do that. I know that's weird, but that I'm a verbal processor.
Then
yeah.
Soar with your strengths, Jamie. Mm-hmm. but I really encourage that because finding quiet space is so hard for people in these days. And you have more answers inside of you than you realize.
Yeah.
And what that requires is getting quiet and documenting it.
Putting the phone away, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and releasing everything else that's clouding your consciousness.
Yes.
To get to the subconscious.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes. And that is, any successful, you know, person that's
yes.
put things out, there's always like these consistent things, you know, I meditate, I get quiet, I go on a self-retreat, I write, but they all write something.
Yeah.
It's not for publishing.
No.
It's just to like play it back for yourself because when you read it, you can be surprised. Or if you do it consistently, so it's not just like a one day exercise.
Yep.
Saturday morning, get up, do it for a half hour, whatever, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
No, do it consistently as you're searching because you'll find some patterns that emerge. And
that's you'll also see the growth.
Yes.
In your thinking too, which I think is important, again, in general, is to see that growth that I was stuck on that and,
mm-hmm.
oh, look, right? I got through it. Like it's almost that confidence builder to say, it's just a different level, new issues, right?
Yes.
As you solve one, it creates others. And getting in that cycle of like, that's how you solve them, right?
Yes.
Is sometimes through that thinking.
Yes. Absolutely. And that does. You do solve as you
And it can be 5 minutes. I mean, this is where people feel like this has to be like this really huge commitment.
No.
It could be 5 minutes a day or 5 minutes a few times a week just to start.
Yes.
Right? Start simple.
Just start. Do one thing. Just do it. Do it with some type of consistency that's going to work for you. As you find benefit from it, you'll build on it. But just... it's like anything, right? If you think that you have to do it for 60 minutes every single day, the only thing I would say is like actually have quiet. And
yeah.
if you can't get
every
it
day.
Yeah, just for a few minutes. It's mm-hmm. amazing what surfaces.
Yep.
The other thing I would say is get out and start talking to people. Because we get in our little circles, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have our patterns of going on.
Super comfortable.
Yes.
Yep.
And
yeah.
even if you are a masterful networker, okay,
mm-hmm.
when you are searching for something different, go talk to different people. People mm-hmm. that are doing what you think you may have an interest in.
Yep.
Or somebody that is doing something that you have no idea what in the world that could even mean.
Get curious.
Yes.
That's what we talk about. Just get curious about things you don't know. You
yes.
do not have to know them to be able to network with people.
Right.
And get curious about it.
Right. And it starts making you think a little bit differently. It puts information together, connects people.
Yeah.
It starts the journey.
And we've had, it's interesting you bring this up, is we've had coaching clients and people, women that I've mentored, that they're like, I didn't even know that job existed when I met that person. Like, I didn't even
right.
know companies did that kind of stuff. And now they're super fascinated by that. They can drive their own development to do something similar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think back to the titles is we don't really know what that means
right.
in a company. until yes. we network with someone and like, oh, you get to do that kind of cool stuff as the VP of blah, 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 right. you know, or whatever it is. And so that's where I think also breaking through the titles is find out what they're accountable for and the kind of work they're actually doing, because the titles can lead you astray too, because titles yes. from company to company don't mean the same thing.
They don't. And it's such a great point, because I've actually coached people that are upset because they have a title that's not like an industry standard. And it's like, how are people going to know what it is I do? Well, if they work with you, they're going to get a pretty good sense.
Yep. And you should be able to talk about it.
Yes.
Not title related.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. And how are you showing up? Do people even want to work with you?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's, and that is true. Like some companies are getting away on purpose from certain types of titles. Mm-hmm. So that will help, I think, over time as we get away from the standardization of titles. In the meantime, though, yeah.
Yeah. I have somebody that was on this podcast, who's a great friend of mine, that is one of the owners or partners in a company, and he's the chief happiness officer.
Yes.
And he holds the title. I mean, like, right? I mean, he talks about it when he knows how to describe it. But to most people, it's like, oh, that's fluffy. No, no, no. It's an actual role in their business, mm-hmm. right? It matters to their business. And that's just a great example of, like, break the mold a little bit in how you think about it. You're seeing a lot of chief experience officers, whether yes. it's employee experience or customer experience, right? So it is kind of fun to see some of these, and the businesses know how to describe it, right? Like, yes. this is what it means. So I think that's fascinating as you see some of these other titles coming out that are much more purpose-driven than they are just industry or societal, socially driven.
Yes, they definitely match the values and the culture of the company better than like the standard. And I'd pay attention to the companies that are doing that.
Yeah, because they're more forward thinking in how they think about people filling seats, right? And we're using people's strengths, I'm guessing, more than their direct experience.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. They've checked these five boxes to get there. And I think that's a great reminder for all of us is that, again, we can't get away completely from a title mattering, right? Like a CEO title for me gets me on stages, gets me connected, and probably gets me more meetings. So there is a time and a place for needing that title. But what we can't do is our internal worth can't be based on that title.
Exactly.
It's that balance of how do we look at the title. The title doesn't matter to me. I know I need it. Right, in the external world, but it's just I don't put as much worth on it. I see much more of a flat organization, right? I'm alongside you versus above you, kind of in the organization. So I think that's an important reflection. So how can people get connected to you, get more information on, and get more of your wisdom? And I know you're launching a podcast. I don't know if we're ready to announce it here yet, but people can kind of follow you at least and see that and get more of this wisdom. So what's the best way for them to connect?
Thank you for that. My website is michaelwkithcart.com. I'm also on LinkedIn at Michael Kithcart, so that's an easy way to connect with me too. I do have champion circles for women that are for women entrepreneurs and for women in leadership. So those are small, up to 10 group, 10 people in each group for coaching that comes both from me and from the people that are in the groups that meets on a monthly basis. So if people are looking for, you know, smaller groups, that's great. The podcast is launching the end of February. It's called Champions of Risk.
Ooh.
And so as we were talking about with that risk, with periods between each letter so that the R, I, S, K all mean different things. Mm-hmm. That'll lead the conversation. But super interested in that. I mean, there's risk in everything that we do as humans. And
absolutely.
What's risky to you is not risky to me and vice versa.
Correct.
And so we're going to explore stories of people taking risk, both those that succeeded in it and those that didn't.
Oh, I got all sorts of people to refer you for that. Again, because their stories are amazing. So
yes.
I love it. I will be listening. That's perfect. And for everybody listening, we'll make sure and put this in the podcast notes so that you've got all of these links and that you've got them. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And for sharing the free coaching with everybody.
Anytime.
you know, the purpose of this podcast is just to bring different topics, right? This, each of these topics isn't solving all of your problems, but it might be the thing you needed to hear today, right? Or you needed to hear this week that's just going to get you unstuck and moving again. And that's the whole definition of success, is just taking a step at a time towards that next level, right? And celebrating in increments along the way. And so I just appreciate everybody continuing to engage. I'm grateful for the listeners that we have and the feedback that we get from these podcasts and how it is helping you just continue to move forward and reach those next levels of success. So thanks everyone for joining us today.